Well, Rob, you know I like myself some wordplay, and so as we sit here finally, after what seems like the longest summer ever, on the eve of training camp, I got, as the thumbnail would suggest, a little camp cleanup. I've corralled a couple of notes for each team of just some little bookkeeping things in some cases, personnel, roster questions still remaining for these teams before they get on the field. Are you ready to finally crank this thing up? Can we talk about some actual football maybe a week from now?
Oh, I am on board 1,000%. Look, I love these shows. I love every show that we do. But I always tell people there's more work to do during the season, but it's so much easier. The off season is when you really earn your money as a content creator. And pretty soon we're going to get into the sweet spot, preseason football, and we'll be off and running.
There's a rhythm to the regular season that there just isn't during the summertime. You got to pivot. You got to be a little creative. So hopefully we've done that today here for you. And I want to start because, you know, we keep saying throughout the summer, like, we try to find opportunities to show some love to the Arizona Cardinals. And maybe I'm not choosing my words properly there. I think the only love they're going to be shown this year is Jeremiah Love. Hopefully he stays healthy for them. But a couple things going on. First of all, we didn't know what was going to be happening with the quarterback situation. Now, they all reported, the veterans did, Wednesday, because they have a football game here in about a week and a half. They play in the Hall of Fame game on August 6th against Carolina. Jacoby Brissett did report to camp. That was a question. He's looking for new money. He's looking for a new contract. Still a question of, will this be a hold-in? Is he going to participate in practice? And if he does, is he going to be the number one guy? I guess I'd ask you this. What do you make of this situation? And in the Cardinals, from the Cardinals' state of mind and where they're at, brand new coach, all the things we've talked about with their roster, does it even matter who's playing?
Well, allow me to quote another famous NFC West employee. I'm just here so I don't get fined. Okay, that's why Jacoby Brissett reported. Nothing has changed with his contract, according to all reports. He's there because he has to be there. It is not a holdout. It is a hold in. I would imagine we'll be seeing something with Jacoby Brissett. Back tightness, general soreness, major boredom, whatever the problem might be with Jacoby Brissett. He wants to get paid like the starting quarterback. Now, he can get, his contract goes up to almost $5.4 million this year, but only $1.5 million is guaranteed. So if you're the Cardinals, like, why don't you just guarantee some more of that money and end this thing? But the Cardinals are going to Cardinal, and so here we are.
But, and that's why I asked it the way that I did. Like, do the Cardinals even need to feel any pressure to get anything done with this contract? Because somebody suggested to me the other day, and it's a little bit hyperbolic, but he said, essentially, isn't Gardner Minshew the same player? Like, they're kind of the same guy in some ways. He's there. You're going to clear a path at some point this year for Carson Beck to get on the field. He signed his contract yesterday. He'll be in camp. Given their long-term plans and how much work is to be done there, I just feel like it'd be a step back. You'd be holding that process back by even having Brissett on the field.
And I'm sure that's what the Cardinals are thinking too, in addition to them just being cheap, because let's be clear, they are. Indeed. But also, it's like the combination of, yeah, we're cheap, but also from a football perspective, it kind of serves them better to have one less guy on the depth chart. So that combination is why I don't think Jacoby Brissett's going to win this standoff.
It is one of the weirdest contract standoffs I think we've seen in quite some time. The guy, for never really being an established starter, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, he's made almost $80 million in his career. It just seemed like a weird hill for him to stand on right now at this point in his career and where the Cardinals are. Meanwhile, we gave them quite a bit of heat after the draft and throughout the summer for maybe the direction they took in the draft, all the needs they have on that defense, particularly up front, and they chose to draft five of their seven picks on offensive players. And really the only one defensive rookie that had the appearance of someone that could help them in an area that they really needed it was Caleb Proctor, the small school defensive tackle, has some pass rush juice. Three technique guy, really exciting from what they saw at the Senior Bowl from him. He goes down with a torn meniscus. about a month or so ago, and then officially is placed on injured reserve yesterday, which means he has to miss the entire season. If you get placed on that list before the cut to 53, you cannot be called back. And so this is their current two deep. When you look at their defensive line, they play that 3-4 alignment, so their outside linebackers are their edge guys. And there's obviously some players that can get to the quarterback. We know about Josh Sweat. We don't know if he really wants to be there, according to some of the buzz from the offseason. Zaven Collins has had flashes. Darius Robinson's been a disappointment, had trouble staying on the field since being their first-round pick a couple of years ago. And Walter Nolan has all sorts of upside, but he missed most of his rookie season with an injury. And then you look at that second team. B.J. Ogilary's been a disappointment. He can't stay healthy. Baron Browning's had his moments. Stills and Billings are run stuffers. And L.J. Collier is a name that I'm sure Seahawk fans probably just stopped this video because I said it out loud. I mean, this is... you talk about rebuild. Are you soft tanking for Arch or somebody like that next year? Throw all that aside. Like, they need more than this, don't they?
You can never have enough. Even if you think you're good, you always need more, because defenses, the lines anyway, they come at you in waves, right? Walter Nolan is not going to play 100% of all the snaps. You're going to rotate him in. Teams always rotate their defensive linemen. And if there is a huge drop off between the first team and the second team, that's going to get exploited, particularly in the division in which the Arizona Cardinals now find themselves. It's going to hurt. And that's why, even though I think the offense has some interesting pieces and with LaFleur maybe will be better, this defense is, they got their work cut out for them. And I just don't see it happening for them this year, especially if Josh Sweat, I believe he's requested a trade. If they honored that, forget it.
Of course, I said to a couple colleagues yesterday, I think this defense might give up 30 points a game this year. I mean, I think that's the kind of trouble that they might be in. Mm. But maybe pass rush won't matter, because they're going to be playing from behind a lot and teams are going to be running the football a lot at them. And so maybe this is all a little bit much ado about nothing. We wish the Cardinals well. We hope for them that they become relevant enough to make us talk about them.
Yeah, I'm not trying to constantly, you know, dismiss and belittle them, but the news is what the news is, and the roster is what the roster is. I'd love to be able to be complimentary of them. Like I said, I like a couple of their pieces on offense. I think Michael Wilson's really good. Trey McBride is obviously great. Mm-hmm. But like, for example, they just had an offensive lineman arrested and charged with 4 gun crimes. Well, a guy who started 11 games for them last year, and Isaiah Adams. Like, yeah. The news is what the news is, and it's not great in Arizona.
No, and they, you know, a lot of people think the reason they went Jeremiah Love at 3 is to try to build some excitement, get some fans in the stands, get some electricity in that building. But when you're getting your butt kicked week in and week out, how much excitement can a running back really generate? That would be my question. We will see how that progresses.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
The Los Angeles Rams have a couple things going on. Of course, they had the loudest and most boisterous offseason and have a whole lot of fans on their side talking about how good that roster is. They are the Super Bowl favorites in a lot of people's minds. Still something really kind of interesting, I think, and unusual with regards to their first-round quarterback, Ty Simpson. It's been debated all summer whether or not that was a smart pick. He still hasn't signed. It sounds like one of these situations where they're wrestling over offsets. He wants similar deals to the 6 quarterbacks that were taken in the first round 2 years ago. All those guys received deals that didn't include offsets. I don't know why that would really matter all that much. Are you planning on getting cut during your rookie contract when you were the 13th pick in the draft? I'm not sure. This might all be much ado about nothing, but it does add another layer, I think, to a lot of the discussion we heard during OTAs, which is neither Ty Simpson or Stetson Bennett was all that impressive in their offseason work. And I still wonder, I had a dream the other night that Jimmy Garoppolo came out of retirement and went back to play again for the Rams. Is my dream going to come true? Do the Rams need to make that kind of a move? They're all in this year. I don't know if they can trust a rookie quarterback to back up a starting quarterback who's had injury issues throughout his career.
Yeah, I thought the fact that McVay, even when Simpson was drafted, said, yeah, he might not be the backup, like immediately afterwards, and I was like, wait, what? Like, he's saying this out loud now? And Mike Garofolo of NFL Media just had a report that Jimmy Garoppolo is not retiring, that he will play for the right team this year. And, you know, could be a situation where if somebody gets injured, they make a phone call. And maybe that's sort of like the handshake deal that they have with Garoppolo, who is obviously the backup quarterback there for the past couple of years. Like, hey, stay in shape, stay ready. You know our playbook already. If something happens with Stafford, we're not giving it to Ty and we're not giving it to Stetson Bennett. We'll give it to you, and they'll go to the 49ers plan in 2019, which is to hide the quarterback as much as possible and let the defense and the running game carry the burden.
It just seems to me, for a team that's gone so all in to try to get another championship in their building, ideally in 2026 with Matthew Stafford, that the maybe the most important position on a roster, for a roster that's built like this, is backup quarterback, to be sure that the drop-off is as minimal as possible should Stafford go down again. It almost makes too much sense for them to bring Garoppolo back. Speaking of all in, the ever since Sam Darnold became the quarterback in Seattle, it's really hard for me to say the name Aaron Donald out loud correctly. Maybe that's just my fear of having to face him. The buzz sure seems to be trending in the direction of him coming back. But it's not as simple as I think a lot of people assumed it would be when news first started to leak out, especially among Rams fans. There was this idea that I'd heard a lot out there that, well, he'll play for the minimum. He's made his money, right? The Rams have already paid the price in dead money for him retiring. Not necessarily the case, according to reports. So first of all, just the nuts and bolts of it is he still had a year left on his deal when he walked away. And so if he walks back into the building, if they activate him as a player and they don't do anything else, that $30 million immediately becomes owed, which would be an issue because the Rams currently only have $18.8 million in cap space, according to Over the Cap. And that's not a real number because that doesn't yet have to account for the full 53, the practice squad, et cetera. It's sounding now, and I've got a quote there from Adam Schefter, like Donald has no, this is going to be trouble. Donald has no desire apparently to come back and play for the veteran minimum or anything along those lines. Schefter says, if he wants to come back, all he has to say is, I want to come back. And then it would be up to the Rams to sit down with Donald to come up with a compromised contract solution. I've seen some numbers thrown around, maybe $16 to $18 million a year. This just seems like, I used the word layer a moment ago. This seems like another layer in the recipe that they're putting together of going all in, because they got some big contract decisions over the next 12 months to make. And I didn't think this was going to be the case, but it seems to me that if they sign Donald, if he wants to come back, it may cost them one of these other deals.
And Aaron Donald walks into the Hall of Fame, as long as he doesn't come back the second, you know, that clock hits zero, the timer that you have to wait before you go into the Hall of Fame. He hasn't played since 2023. He's 35 years old now, but he hasn't played football in a while. And I know he stays in really good shape. Really good shape is not football shape. And I think Donald himself has kind of proven that by the way he's working out. He himself has said he needs to get into shape. He's putting on the pads at the Rams facility to see how he feels. And if I were him, I'm not taking the league minimum. I'm not taking less than my $30 million. Now, if you want to defer some of it or restructure it in some way, you know, maybe I could be open to that. But I made it out, right? I have a great career. I have a championship. I am a first ballot Hall of Famer, an all-time NFL player, one of the greatest defensive tackles, maybe the greatest in the history of the NFL. What do I need to come back for? To win another Super Bowl? Yeah, it'd be cool. But you know, I don't know that, like, he's doing this for the love of the game. I think he's doing it because it'd be really fun. Mm-hmm. I've never heard especially a great player. I've been following the NFL closely for 30 years. I've never heard a great player say the games weren't fun, even at the end of their career. They love the games.
Yeah.
That's the easy part. The hard part is doing all the other stuff and getting prepared for it. If he's going to put his body through that, he's going to want to be compensated appropriately. And I'm not saying that this won't happen, but I think this is a significant hurdle.
I do feel like it's less than 100% than maybe I thought a week or two ago. And it's because of his comments that he's said, as you alluded to there, that he's not going to come back unless he feels like he is the same player that he was 2 years ago. It sounds very clearly that that's his mindset. He's a competitive dude. He holds high standards for himself. Obviously, he might decide that he's not that guy anymore and choose not to do this after all. If he does, though, I wonder if it's kind of an all or nothing sort of scenario where, because of the money situation, Maybe he agrees to a two-year deal with some void years or whatever, something that's easy for them to get out of maybe next year if he decides not to run it back again. But they'd have to do something pretty creative to get him the kind of money it sounds like he'd want if he comes back.
And I don't blame him one bit. He got out. He was obviously still in good shape. His body was still functioning. It's a lot to ask the guy to come back, you know, into that life, into that sort of meat grinder. Now he'd be have an opportunity of like, this is a pass rusher dream opportunity to come back and play for the Rams. But again, it's not nothing. It's not Madden. You don't just pop him back on the team, you know, after you sign him. If I were the Rams, I would tell him like, we don't need you to play 60 snaps a game, right? We can put you in the key situations. We'll put you in pass rushing situations. Maybe we'll put you in on some first downs to kind of shore up the run game a little bit. And we're not going to be asking you to carry the Aaron Donald workload. It's just going to be fun for you. I would be throwing every possible enticement at Aaron Donald just because even if he's 70% of what he was, he's still a top 10 defensive tackle in the league.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Well, the Seattle Seahawks were certainly right a year ago when they selected Nick Emmanuel in the second round. They were surprised that he was still available after day one. They had a first round grade on him, and so they traded up to get him. And certainly everything he did on the field as a rookie solidified and confirmed that draft status. But there's some uncertainty now about his availability going into week one this season. A new revelation is he was placed on the PUP list a couple of days ago for reasons that nobody could really understand. He was healthy throughout most of OTAs and minicamp. Corbin Smith, who's been on my show many times, covers the Seahawks on a full-time basis, just worked as a coach at his football camp last Thursday, said he was jogging around, said there was no issues. But apparently sometime within the last week, Nick Emmanuel had surgery on his ankle, and he is being placed now on the physically unable to perform list, which can be brought off at any time. Sounds like it's accumulation of two injuries that he suffered. The first one, week one against San Francisco on the sixth snap of the game, caused him to miss the next three games. And then, of course, the injury the week leading up to the Super Bowl. One was a high ankle, one was low ankle, but the same ankle, they went in there, scoped it, cleaned it out. This is kind of where it stands now, according to Brady Henderson of ESPN. According to a source, the Seahawks knew that Emmanuel might eventually require surgery. He tried to manage his ankle over the offseason, but as he was ramping up for the start of training camp, he continued to experience soreness and opted to have an arthroscopic procedure that was performed earlier this month. You asked me a question in our text in response to this. That question was,
why did he just have surgery now? When something like this happens, I go into heavy skepticism mode because I feel like it's our job as content creators. Okay, a lot of guys have off-season surgery. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a brutal game. You play through it. Seahawks are making a Super Bowl run. No problem. But it's July. It's July 23rd. What took so long? Why have it now and potentially throw your week one into question? Expected back for week one, but who knows? Either could be complications, whatever. Why not have the surgery immediately? And then you're, you know, more hitting the ground running this year.
And in this case, I would take them at their word, which and exactly the scenario that Brady laid out in the quote. I've come to learn over the last couple of years a lot more about the Seahawks and how heavily they invest in their sports science department. This year, even leading up to the draft, John Schneider brought his main guy that runs that department on his radio show before the draft and explained a lot of this stuff. And as frustrating as it is for us as fans, content creators, to look on and see how teams manage injuries when they're not giving us all the details, it can be frustrating sometimes. There were times last year where the Seahawks, I felt like kind of were a little too aggressive in not placing players on injury reserve because they thought they would miss less than four games. And then they end up missing four games. But I'll say this, every time one of those players came back, they were 100% ready to go. Whereas other teams, maybe not the case. They rush guys back, try to get them on the field. I feel like that department is so locked in on how to manage injuries that they must have felt confident he could get through the offseason without surgery and that he'd be okay and that there was a setback in the last month or so. I don't think this is anything serious.
Well, that's the scary part for me, is that he tried to do it without the surgery, and then as he kind of started to ramp up, he was experiencing more and more pain. And maybe it's the kind of thing where they're like, all right, we got pain, we'll get the surgery and it'll be done. And I'm not trying to stir up anything, and I'm not hoping for that, for the record. I never root for injuries. I want everybody to be healthy.
Yep.
But when something like this happens, to me, it's a red flag, and I pay close attention to what the team is saying and, more importantly, what the team is doing. Hopefully he'll be back, but this was obviously a little bit of a scary situation, and we'll see. And like you said, hopefully it's nothing and he's back. But, you know, it's funny. Everyone talks about the 49ers and what if people get hurt? It's like, yeah, that's true. But other teams have injuries too. And this was an example of that.
Yeah, I'd be a lot more worried if it was an actual structural mm-hmm. situation where they had to go in, and, you know, the fact it was just a cleanup, just a scope. Hopefully he'll be back week one, because, man, that defense is a different animal when he's on the field. We saw that last year in the games that he missed. Another player that they hope isn't going to miss any games. And let me just check, because as we're recording this, I feel like this could happen any minute. I don't want to miss any breaking news. Doesn't look like we are, but Devin Witherspoon sounds like he is on the verge of becoming the highest paid cornerback in NFL history, at least for a minute, until Christian Gonzalez probably tops him. Sounds like the estimates are between $30 and $32 million, according to Ian Rapoport. That $32 million mark in new money is probably likely to be the number, so that he can say, his agents can say, highest paid player. Let me ask you it this way, from the outside looking in and from someone who covers an opposing team in the division. Is this a case of, we know how important Devin Witherspoon is to the defense. He's Mike McDonald's favorite player, just the frenetic energy and all the different things he can do. But he's not your traditional cornerback in any way, shape, or form. He's not like Christian Gonzalez. He's not an outside lockdown corner in most people's eyes. It's his versatility that brings him that value. Is that value worth being paid more than any other corner in the league, in your opinion?
As long as you're not planning on firing Mike McDonald anytime soon, right? Like, mm-hmm. especially, you know, obviously coming off a Super Bowl, that's not going to happen. But that would be my takeaway, is like, if you're going to stay in this business at this price, and that's the key point, then you have to be confident you can get premium production. Jerry Jones always says, I'm okay paying a premium if I can get a premium. As long as McDonald can get Witherspoon to play the way he's played, pay the money. Don't think twice about it. Cost of doing business. If there was any uncertainty about Mike McDonald's future, maybe you don't want to get into this business if you're the Seahawks. Maybe you know, use the franchise tag, whatever the case may be. But Mike McDonald's not going anywhere. Pay the money. Settle the uncertainty. Lock in one of your favorite players, a key part of your defense, and move along.
Well, and one thing I would say to anyone who does feel uneasy about this, because some people do, some fans get really hung up on the average annual value and what they think a player's worth. And if there's a disconnect there, they can get a little anxious. This contract will very likely be structured in a similar way to how they did Jaxon Smith's Njigba, where they have 2 years left on the deal because they've already picked up his fifth year option. They fold those into the contract. So the first number you'll see will be the new money. And then you have to wait a little bit to see what the full extent of the contract combined looks like. And the Seahawks are so good at structuring these things so that they don't put themselves in trouble down the road. It sounds like this is going to get done, and probably sometime in the next 48 hours before veterans report to Renton, Washington.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
Speaking of reporting, not reporting, let's talk about your San Francisco 49ers. And we can't stop talking about Brandon Ayuk unless or until the point at which he's not a San Francisco 49er anymore. And we don't need to recap all the drama. To boil it all down, he doesn't want to be a 49er anymore. He keeps talking about life after the 49ers. But until he reports, they have absolutely no motivation or incentive to cut him. My question to you is this: how much, if at all, is this a distraction now that we're actually in camp preparing for the season? The offseason, this stuff is easier to brush away. But is it going to become a growing distraction if they don't once and for all settle this thing?
1%. And I've laid out the strategy on my shows. All you do is just repeat the same answer over and over again, because they're going to get asked about it when they meet the media. They will, for one day. And you just say, he's not here. He's not on the active roster. We're focused on the guys that are actually a part of this team, and we're trying to win a Super Bowl. And that's all you say. Anytime any question with Brandon Ayuk's name is in it, done. You just repeat that answer, and the story goes away. And I'm sure Ayuk will have a social media post when the Niners veterans report to keep his name in the flow. I think it's having less and less effect, and I don't think it ever really had any effect to begin with. So to me, it's a non-story. We got one wide receiver that is a 49er that wants to be a Commander, and we got one wide receiver that was a Commander and wants to be a 49er again, and that's Deebo Samuel.
We sure do. And man, there seems to be a lot of sentiment among the fans, at least from what I see, in bringing Deebo back. I even saw a picture of him online the other day doing his off-season workouts, and he looked a lot more cut up and in shape than he looked on the field last year in that Commander's uniform. He certainly filled that thing out well in 2025. So I put together just a couple of numbers here to show, and granted, not apples to apples. Jaden Daniels wasn't healthy last year. The Commanders had some issues on offense. So I threw together some pros and cons of potentially bringing him back, and then I'll be fascinated to hear your take. Some of the pros, he played in 16 games last year. He was healthy throughout most of the season. He was productive and involved in their offense. He had 72 catches. His 72% catch rate was his career best, so he still has reliable hands. And he put together 800 scrimmage yards and 6 total touchdowns. That's not nothing for an aging offensive weapon. Now, the cons, a lot of the explosive numbers dropped. And again, is this tied to the quarterback? That's where I want to get your thoughts. His yards per catch was significantly down. His efficiency was significantly down. They didn't use him as much in the run game as San Francisco did. How do you view Deebo? Just, is he washed or not? And does he fit, would he fit on this 49ers offense now?
Hard pass. No, thank you. He's not washed. Like, he still has some value, but I don't know what that value is, particularly to the 49ers. You have Mike Evans. You have Ricky Pearsall. Your top draft pick this year was Daizon Stribling. He's a wide receiver. You have Christian Kirk. You have DeMarcus Robinson. You have Jacob Cowing. You have Jordan Watkins. You've got young guys. You've got old guys. There's no room for Deebo Samuel on the 49ers. And remember, Dan, this was supposed to be motivated Deebo, right? He was off the 49ers. He was going to go to Washington, and he was going to get the ball because he was complaining in San Francisco that he wasn't getting the ball enough. So motivated Deebo, as good as he can be at this point in his career, is 800 total yards and 6 total touchdowns. Now you're going to bring this guy back to San Francisco where he's going to feel super comfortable and settled in. I don't even care if he's motivated or not. I don't want Deebo Samuel. You cannot go home again. The past is the past. It's over.
Now, at a certain point, though, he's going to sign somewhere. And I have this, I didn't have a dream about this one. I just have this feeling, right? There's a lot of buzz in the offseason about the Rams wanting to add one more weapon to their offense. I feel like Deebo might be a sneaky, very interesting fit there. Just throwing that out there.
That would make me vomit in my mouth. It's one thing to see Deebo Samuel play for the Commanders. To see him play for the Rams, because his best games have come against the Rams. Some of his best plays have come against the Rams. There was the play in 2021 where he catches that high pass and he runs through the whole defense and trucks Jalen Ramsey into the end zone. Like, that would be really, really hard to swallow. But, like, the whole – what are they waiting for? The whole league had their shot at Deebo Samuel. Mm-hmm. And nobody wanted him. And I think that is very telling as well. If the Niners have a bunch of injuries a couple weeks into the season, then maybe reconsider. But I'm sorry. You know, you can't, on the one hand, bang on the Niners because they signed Mike Evans and they're so old on offense, and then say you want them to bring in 30-year-old Deebo Samuel. Like, those two things don't jive for me.
Yeah. Man, it does seem like the league is trending even sharper towards, when you're an offensive weapon, you rely on speed and explosiveness. Once you hit that 30-year-old mark, or you start to show just a little bit of a loss of a step, I mean, it's over for you. There's running backs that are out of the league at 27, 28 years old right now. If you look at the free agent list right now, there's a lot of big names on it. They're still available. You just it's a young man's game, I think, more now than ever when it comes to offensive skill positions. Well, the next time we get together, we get to actually talk about some stuff that happens on the field, in camp, reports, injuries, who's playing, who's not. Yeah, we'll get into all of that next week. That's Rob Guerrera. Check his stuff out on the Gold Standard Podcast Network. Subscribe over there if you would, please. I'm Dan Vienz of Seahawks Forever. Please do the same for me. We appreciate it. As we are every single week, we'll be back again with you next week with more of the mixtape talking about the best division in football. Rob, we'll see you then.
Thanks, Dan.